So we are on Daf Chof Ches Amud Beis. We made an introduction yesterday, which will prepare us for the Gemara today. Remember, we discussed yesterday the Arusa. Arusa, I will not translate as the engaged woman. That's a very bad translation because engaged basically has no halachic weight whatsoever. Rather, we will call it the betrothed woman. And as we mentioned yesterday, not chas v'shalom, that nowadays we don't have erusin and nisuin. Of course we do. It's just that now it all happens under the chuppah. Whereas it used to be, they did the erusin. That's the first Mishnah in Kiddushin or Isha, mekudeshes, bekesef b'shtaru b'biya. And then they did nisuin at a later stage. We pointed out yesterday, following the Kiddushin or the erusin, she is essentially considered connected to him. If anybody would have relations with her, that's awesome in our Torah, and it's Chayev Misa. So we ask, so what is the difference? What does Nisuin add? So we said it adds some halachas about Tumah for Koyein and Yerusha. So it's a sort of halfway house status. Now, back to our subject. That was the lengthy introduction that we made yesterday. What's our Shaila? What about Eidos? At the end of the day, we're learning the sugya of Eidos, psule Eidos for Krovim. And this is the big question. Is an Arusa considered a Korov? On the one hand, she definitely has a connection to you. There's no question about it. You gave a Kiddushin, she cannot marry anybody. Remember we said, if after Erisin you want to now part company, you have to give her a get. So you see that with regard to some halachas, she really is considered your wife. On the other hand, she's clearly not your fully fledged wife. If she passes away now, the husband will not inherit her. If he's a Kohen, he cannot become Tomei for her. So you see, it's somewhere in the middle. So have a look at the Gemara now. It's on the second last narrow line. Oma Rabo Barbachano Meid Odom Leishtoi Arusa. So there we have it. A person is allowed, according to Rabo Barbachano, according to Rabo, a person is allowed to testify about his Arusa. Very big chiddush. Very big chiddush. Even though they certainly have some marital connection, but at the end of the day, they are not fully fledged husband and wife, so he may testify about her. Now, there is a qualification. Omar Avina, Loi Omron. That was not said, Elo La'afuke Mino. Aval Le'iyuli Lo Loi Mehemon. What does that mean, la'afuke mino? La'afuke means to extract from her. Whenever we speak about Eidos, about somebody, obviously you're either testifying for them or against them. Generally, we do not distinguish. You cannot testify against your brother, either for or against. We've never yet seen a distinction. And here's the first time that we're seeing a distinction. You're allowed to testify about your Arusa, said Rabbo. But Ravina's now adding that's only if it is la'afuke, to extract money from her. So you're actually working against her. That's when you're allowed to testify about her, in other words, against her. Avol le'iyulilo, but if it's for her, in order to bring money to her, Loi Mehemon. Then you're not believed. That's what Ravina is qualifying. We'll see Rashi in a moment. This is Ravina's qualification of Rabbo's statement. So again, Rabbo said that you can testify about your Arusa. Ravina says that's only true if you're testifying against her, not if you're testifying for her. Says the Gemara, I'm sorry to tell you, v'loi hi, that's not the case. He's not right. Loishno, we do not make a distinction la'afuke, v'loi shno le'eyule, loi mehemon. Period. Now again, we have a machloikus over here. What are we paskin like? You see that little letter once again? Again, you've got to use every dot on the page. You see the little letter by the words loi shno? Yeah. Next to the word loishon is a tiny little hey. So even without bothering to look in the margin, and even without bothering to open a Rambam or a Torah Shulchan Aruch, that clearly tells you that's the halacha. That little letter always references the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch that paskens that particular line, la halacha. So even if you're lazy and you don't want to look up the Torah, the Shulchan Aruch, or the Rambam, but we know the halacha now. The halacha, it's a machlokes in the Gemara, but apparently the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, paskens that we do not distinguish. We do not pasken like Ravina, rather we simply say an arusa. You cannot distinguish. Now, this loihi, what is the loihi in fact telling you? We do not distinguish between for her or against her. In every case, what? Loi mehemon. That is not like the original halacha of Rabbo. Again, Rabbo came into the Beis HaMedrash and said, you're allowed to testify about your arusa. Ravina made a distinction. Well, sometimes yes, sometimes not. The Gemara says, v'loihi, they're both wrong. Because loi shno makes no difference whether she is, you're trying to testify for her or against her, loi mehemon, you're never believed. So we do not adopt the position of Rabbo or Ravina. We disagree with both of them. You're never believed. Have a look at Rashi. La'afuke mino. To extract money. So Ravina wanted to distinguish between extracting money and giving her money. If it's la'afuke mino, what does that mean? Says Rashi, l'choiv lo, to make her the debtor against her. V'lizkois le'bal dino, and to work in favor of her baldin, of her opponent, then you're believed. The koroiv loy hava, because he's not a relation to her, kolzman shaloy nasa, as long as he hasn't married her. Umiu, however, le'iyule lo, but in order to give her money, loy mehemon, then you would not believe that adaita didei ka'ovid, because he's doing it for his own wishes. Why is he doing it for his own wishes? Because he knows that shortly they're going to be married, so everything that she has is going to be his. Either way, we do not paskin like that. What do we paskin? That you are not allowed to testify about your arusa, whether it's for or against. It makes no difference. Says the Gemara. Yeah, Rabbi Larry.
If we know these halachas already by an Nesua, so then why would we think, what would be the havamina to believe that by an arusa it would change?
Because it's not a havamina, it's true. It's not a havamina, it's true. Rabbi holds, it's different. It's not just a havamina.
No, no, but I'm saying, but what the Gemara just said is that I already knew, heard in my head. That's the Yegiyah issue. If he's doing it in our favor, it helps him. So that's the Peshut Asur. But if he's going against her, it's honest.
And we don't know that.
I know, but that's my point. But that would be the Havamina to think that would have been the Havamina to think that that's why he could do it.
Rabbo says you can testify in all cases. Rabbo didn't distinguish. Rabbo says you can just testify in all cases. Ravina said it depends. And the final halacha is like neither of them. So it's not a havamina, there's a machlokes, a three-way machlokes. So we paskin that you're not believed.
Why do we need to learn arusa? Can't we just learn that from a nesua?
No, because arusa is not related, because arusa is not your wife. That's why Rabbi says you can testify about her, because it's not the same as a nesua. A nesua is your wife. That's the discussion over here. Now, have a look at the Gemara. when the Gemara says Veloihi, Veloihi, they're not correct, and you cannot testify about your Arusa. And as mentioned, that is the halacha. We're now going to explain that position. Says the Gemara, Mai Daitech. This is all the opinion that says Veloihi, it's him talking. And he's facing his opponents. And he says, Mai Daitech, why do you hold that you're allowed to testify about the Arusa? I disagree. And I said Veloihi, and I said it makes no difference whether it's for or against, you can never testify about your Arusa. I'm going to explain my side of the argument. And by doing so, he does as follows. He says, tell me, my daitcha, what's your opinion? Where are you coming from that you wanted to suggest that you can testify against your Arusa because you're not considered related? It must be, says the Gemara, you must have been following the reasoning of Ula. Well, what did Ula say? Ishtai Arusa. If somebody's betrothed, again, not an Ishtai Nesua, Ishtai Arusa, his kala, Loi Oinein. What does loy oinein mean? Look at Rashi. Mai daitich, what's your opinion? Deloy choshavto le korev. Why did you consider her not to be a relative and you wanted to maintain that he's allowed to testify about her? And the answer was because you're going with Ula. What did Ula say? Ula told us a bunch of halachas about an arusa, which all seem to suggest that they're not related. That's where you're coming from. What are those halachas? So altogether, there are a few halachas, three or four halachas. Have a look at Rashi. Number one, loy oinein. What's an oinein? An oinein, as we know, is somebody, Rachmana Litzlan, one of the seven immediate family relative, passes away. So until the kvura, he has a very special status. It's called oinein. One of the halachas of an oinein is he's not allowed to eat kodshim, korbanos. After the kvura, even during the shiva, he's allowed to. But in that slot of time between the death and the burial, where he's an oinein, he's not allowed to eat kodshim. So the question is, if somebody's arusa passes away, does that halacha of oinein apply? Can the chosen eat kodshim? And Ula said, yes, no problem. Look at Rashi. Loi oinein im meisa. If she dies, meaning before the marriage, as an arusa, einoi neser bekodshim. He does not become prohibited from eating kodshim, machmas aninus. So what would that suggest? That seems to suggest that they're not really properly married. They're not really related. That's halacha number one. Look back into the Gemara on the third line. Ishtoi arusa loy oinein veloy metameilo. What does that mean, veloy metameilo? That's going with Kohenim, says Rashi. Im Kohen hu, if he's a Kohen, even though a Kohen is allowed to become Tomei for the immediate seven closest relatives, but not for the Arusa. So once again, this is all Ula's list. Once again, what does that suggest? It suggests at the time of Erusin, they're not essentially married. We have two halachas that seem to point that way. Back into the Gemara. V'chein hi, so too the other way around. When he dies, loy oinenes v'loy metamei lo. Now Rashi points out that there's a mistake over here. What does it mean that she cannot become Tomei? She's not a Kohen. She's just a betrothed to a Kohen. So clearly that's a mistake. It's just because we said in the first line, Einoi Matame Los, we said Einoi Matame Loi. But Rashi points out, obviously, that must be a mistake. Either way, carry on now. Meso, first word on the line, Einoi Yersha. This is now the third halacha. If she dies, he will not inherit her. The halacha is normally that when a wife passes away, the first relative is the husband. But over here, he's not the husband because they're not married. So how many halachas has Ulla told us altogether? Three halachas. Number one, that if she dies, it does not make him into an oinein. Therefore, he's allowed to eat kodshim. Number two, he's not allowed to become tomei for her if he's a kohen. Number three, he does not inherit her. That was Ulla's list. One more halacha. Meis hu, goivach subasa. If he dies, then she can collect her ksuba. Why can she collect her ksuba? So this is all complicated. No, say, I don't want to get into it so much. Have a look briefly in Rashi. Goivach subasa. The Gemara Bava Metzia explains, essentially, one only has to pay up the ksuba when he dies if they're really married. But if he wrote to her specifically that he's prepared to give her a ksuba, minho erusin, then obviously in the event that he dies, following the erusin, he has to pay up the ksuba. Okay, so let's get back to our subject now. We had opinion number one of Rabba that you're allowed to testify about your Arusa. We had the final opinion that says, no, you're not allowed. Never. We're not distinguishing between against her, for her, it makes no difference. You cannot testify against your Arusa. It didn't tell us clearly who authored that opinion. It just said, Veloihi, it's not correct. Rabba is incorrect. So we don't know who's talking, but let's just call it the Gemara. So the Gemara now, as it were, throws the ball back into the court of Rabba and says, Rabba, my daitech. What was your opinion? Come on, explain. Why did you maintain that you're allowed to give edus about the Arusa? Surely it must be you're coming from Ulla's list, because you read Ulla's list. And Ulla seems to be teaching you time and time and time again that what? That after Erusin, they're not considered married. That's why there's no halachas of Tumah, of Aninus, of Yerusha. All of that list seems to point in one direction, and that is that they're not married. So I guess, says the Gemara to Rabba, that's where you're coming from. So you're adding up one and one is two. And you're saying, if Ulla maintains that they're not really married, and that's why all of these halachas of Aninus, Yerusha, and Tumah don't apply, well, if they're not really married, then clearly they're not related. And that's why you maintain that they are allowed to testify about each other. Says the Gemara, I'm now going to explain why you're wrong. Why Ulla is not a proof, not that I'm disagreeing with Ulla, I agree with Ulla, but that's nothing to do with Eidus. Why not? Look at the Gemara. Says the Gemara, Hosam, over there. What does that mean? In Ulla's list, B'she'eroi Tola Rachmona. The Torah, on some occasions, uses the word she'er to mean the wife. There, it clearly means a fully fledged wife. So wherever the Torah writes the magic word she'er, then it must mean a fully fledged wife, not an arusa. So therefore, as we're going to see in Rashi in a second, in the case of aninus and tumah and yerusha, there the Torah writes clearly the word she'er. So if that's the case, that's how we know that in those particular examples, it only applies in the case of a fully fledged wife. And that's why Ullah maintained that after Erusin, that's not a fully fledged wife, she's not a she'er. If she's not a she'er, then none of those halachas apply. But that's only because those halachas all depend on she'er. Look at the Gemara again. Hosam over there, b'she'er I underline, tola rachmona, the Torah depends. The Torah makes it contingent on being a she'er, va'akati, and as yet, lav she'eroi he, she is not yet his she'er, she is not yet his fully fledged wife, and that's why Ullah said all of these previous halachas do not apply. But hacha over here, what are we talking about? Over here we're talking about Eidos. Eidos has nothing to do with she'er. What is Eidos dependent on? Hacha mishum ikruve daito underline. They have kiruv hadas. How would you translate kiruv hadas? Rabbi Yosef, how do art spell translate kiruv hadas? Some closeness of mind.
Closeness of feeling, actually.
A closeness of feeling, have some sort of close feeling. Hocha mishum ikruve daitahu. Here, it's not dependent on she'er or not she'er. What is it dependent on? Whether they have close feelings. V'ho ikruve daite legabo. And he definitely has close feelings regarding her. Why? Well, he obviously likes her because he's agreed to marry her. So therefore, says the Gemara, that's why we disagree with Rabba. Because Rabba's whole basis was what? Ullah's list. And he saw in Ullah that that following the Erusin, they're not considered fully married, they're not really related, in which case you're allowed to testify. Says the Gemara, no, v'loihi. It's a separate discussion. Over there, the Torah makes it contingent on being a she'er. She'er means a fully fledged wife. And yes, she's not a fully fledged wife. And that's why Ullah said, none of those halachas are applicable. I agree. But over here, we're talking about Eidos. Eidos is not dependent on being technically related, fully fledged wife. Rather, what is it dependent on? Close feeling. You clearly have a close feeling for somebody you're about to marry. That's why you cannot testify. Says Rashi, you have Rashi? Hosam, over there. Over there, Gabe Tuma, the Yerusha. With regard to the lochas of Tuma and Yerusha, that was Ullah's list. It's all contingent on whether you are or whether you are not she'eroi. Why? Says Rashi. Kedeksiv, what does it say in the Torah? Ki im a kohen cannot become tome unless it is l'she'eroi, underline, hakarov. What does that word mean, she'eroi? V'omar mar, Gemara says in Yevamos, She'eroi zu ishtoi. So you see that if a kohen wants to become tomei to his wife, it's got to be she'eroi, which means it's got to be a fully fledged wife. So too says Rashi, v'chein b'yerushas habal. So too with regard to inheritance of the husband when he inherits the wife, L'she'eroi, underline, hakorov eloi mimishpachtoi v'yorash oisa. That's the posuk. Mikan, from here we learn, shehabal yoyresh, who does he inherit? es ishtoi, only when she's a fully fledged wife, but yesh noichalin is a perikin, or basar called be yesh noichalin. And therefore, we now have the machloikas complete. If we're talking about halachas that require she'eroi, fully fledged wife, so then yes, I agree. And arusa is not a fully fledged wife. So if Yerusha, if Tuma, if Aninus, all of those dependent on fully fledged wife She'eroi, so Ula is 100% correct that after Erisin, none of these apply because she's not She'eroi. But we're not talking about that. What are we talking about? We're talking about a different discussion. We're talking about Eidus. Eidus is not dependent on She'eroi. What is it dependent on? Kiruv Hadas. A close feeling. And that is where we maintain that somebody that you have agreed to marry and you've actually done the Erusin, you clearly have close feelings to, and that's why you're Apostle Eidus. Now, we have to point out something very important. We Chas V'Shalom must not make a mistake and say, one second, if you're telling me it doesn't depend on being technically related, it depends on Kiruv Hadas. So then maybe, I don't know, I can't testify against my friend and against my business partner and against my tennis partner and the guy again lent me money, etc., etc. What's the gather anymore? That obviously is a mistake. Because even though it's a Kiruv Hadas, we still needed psukim. We didn't merely say, well, anybody you have a relationship with the Apostle Eidus, we need a psukim. And we saw a whole long omud, what about your great uncle and a shlishi barishan and a shlishi b'sheni? So clearly, we leave it to Chazal to decide whom I'm considered to have close feelings with. And I cannot just make it up as I go along. Well, this guy I've been playing tennis with for 48 years every Sunday morning, I clearly have Kiruv Hadas. No. Why? Because not a relative. How does that make sense? I might have a long-lost brother who I haven't spoken to for 47 years. And this tennis partner of mine, I've been playing with him every single Sunday morning. So surely I have closer feelings to him than my long-lost brother. Tov, we leave it to Chazal, we leave it to the Torah. The definition of close feeling, we leave it to Chazal HaKadoshim to decide. All the Gemara is saying, it doesn't depend on technically being related. We saw, for example, Chorgoy. Chorgoy was your stepson. Your stepson is zero relative of yours whatsoever. Happens to be that his mother happens to be your wife. Okay? And Chazal HaKadoshim, Barov, Chochmosom, understood, there's a Kiruv Hadas. There's a Kiruv Hadas. So again, we might all say, but come on, please, surely I have a Kiruv Hadas to my local Rav, who I like so much. And what about my best friend? Finish. We leave that for Chazal to decide. It's got to be a relative. But what type of relative? It does not need to be an absolute blood relative. Even an Arusa, who is not yet my wife, Chazal HaKadoshim maintain that she's Pasul Leidus, and you cannot testify against her either. Okay, we have a couple of minutes left, just enough time to begin the next sugya. Chorgoy, we'll make a start, even though Bezos Hashem will come back to this next Sunday, I believe, Sunday, Rosh Chodesh, Ador Ador Sheini, Mitz Hashem, Shenichnas Ador, Marbim Basimcha, Chorgoy Levadoy. Now, if you remember, we saw the Chorgoy, your stepson has a very peculiar status. Why is it peculiar? Because on the one hand, you cannot testify about your stepson. But on the other, it does not apply to his children and sons-in-law. All the other relatives, your brother and your uncle and your brother-in-law. Remember, the Mishnah concluded by saying, it's them plus their children and children-in-law. The Chorgoy, the stepson, was the exception. Over there was no plus. You cannot testify about your son-in-law, but your son-in-law's children, not your son or your stepson, excuse me, but your stepson's children, your stepson's children-in-law, no problem at all. That's called levadai. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanon, Chorgoi Levadoi. Reb Yossi Omer Gisoi. V'tanya Eidach Gisoi Levadoi. So when it comes to your brother-in-law, we seem to have a machloikus. Our Mishnah clearly said that you cannot testify about your brother-in-law and neither your brother-in-law's children and children-in-law. And it turns out, not so poshut. We have a whole discussion about it. There's a lengthy Rashi, which we're not going to see now, we'll see next time. He goes out of his way to explain that this opinion clearly disagrees with the Mishnah. So it may turn out that Chorogoi is actually not in a category of his own. It may be that your brother-in-law, there too, only he can you not testify about. But his children and children-in-law, you may be allowed to, just like your stepson. This we'll have to see more with Hashem next time. We'll hold it over here. Be'ezras Hashem, if anybody's interested. Hope there'll be a special share tonight on the inyan of Shabbos Shkolim. This week is Shabbos Shkolim, special Shabbos Hashem, and the Gemara Shul will resume hopefully next time on Sunday, Mitzvah Hashem.